The shiur tonight is continuing the issues of Torah Shabbat Peh. And tonight we're going to talk about mistakes. So we said we're going to talk about last week. And the title is, What About Te'er is Human? Can humans make mistakes about Torah? And what does that do to Torah and to Halacha? So you can't give a shiur about Torah Shabbat Peh and not quote the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Can everybody hear me, by the way? Just want to make sure everybody can hear me. Everybody hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay? Okay.
Perfectly.
So you can't give a shiur about Torah Shabbat Peh and not mention the Gemara in Bava Metzia. This is the Gemara about Rabbi Eliezer and the Tanur Shel Achnai. What happened was is that Rabbi Eliezer got in a dispute with the other rabbis about whether or not a certain Tanur should be Tahor or Tamei. And it really doesn't matter which side each of them is on. That's not really the focus of the story. The point of the story is that Rabbi Eliezer, who was one of the greatest of his generation, he started bringing forth every imaginable argument, as the Gemara says, and they wouldn't accept it. Everybody was on the other side. So he said to them, he started the war, he said, if Halacha is like me, then this carob tree, this Eitz Charuv, is going to prove it. And it tore itself out of its place and moved several amot. So the rest of the rabbis said, no, sorry, we don't bring any proofs from carob tree. So they continued, and he said, okay, if I'm right, then the stream of water will flow backwards. So again, it happened, but they said, no, we don't listen to the stream. And then he said, if I'm right, then the walls of the Beit Midrash are going to start caving in. So there's the Beit Midrash getting involved. And that's what happened. And this time, instead of just letting things happen, Rabbi Yeshua actually yelled at the walls and said, what are you getting involved? Why are you interfering? And then the walls became kind of diagonal. It was like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. This is our version of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. The walls of that Beit Midrash were kind of crooked. Then finally, Eliezer said,
sounds like Star Wars.
If the halacha agrees with me, is like me, then it should be proved from Shamayim. And a bat kol came out from Shamayim and said, why do you dispute with Rabbi Eliezer? All halacha. Halacha kamoto, b'kol mekomot. Halacha is always like Rabbi Eliezer. So that was pretty convincing. It's a bat kol. That's basically God coming out and saying he's right. But Rabbi Yeshua got up and he said, lo b'shamayim hi. Sorry, you can't win. Lo b'shamayim hi. And the Gemara says, what does it mean? Rabbi Yirmiyah said, the Torah already was given at Har Sinai. But we don't pay attention to a bat kol. Ein mashkichin b'bat kol. Because you already said at Har Sinai, acharei rabim lahatot. You go after the majority. And the majority disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer was outvoted. So the coda to the story is Rav Natan met Eliyahu HaNavi. And he said, what was Hashem doing at that exact moment? You know, was he upset? Was he happy? So Eliyahu said he was laughing with joy and he was saying, Nitzchuni banai nitzchuni. My sons have defeated me, my sons have defeated me. Now the unfortunate end to the story is that Rabbi Eliezer had to go into Nidui. He was excommunicated because he wouldn't cave to the rest of the Rabbanan. And he was excommunicated until the end of his life. They couldn't come within four amot of him and it was tragic. But the story illustrates something about the way the Torah works. Now, what do we make of this story? Was Rabbi Eliezer right? Were the Chachamim right? If Rabbi Eliezer was right, then why didn't they agree with him? What do you guys make of this story? How are we supposed to understand it?
To be honest, I do not understand it at all. It sounds like science fiction.
Oh, you mean the details of, like, you know, the walls caving in and all that stuff?
Yeah. I can just see Chewbacca and Han Solo with the pole holding the walls from Star Wars. It doesn't sound like anything.
Okay, that's one problem.
Pretty weird.
It sounds to me like you would say that certain parts of the Torah are not open to interpretation. They are set in stone, so to speak.
How do you get that from the story?
Because Lobosha Miami, you bring every raya, the tree and the river and the batzkol, and you say, no, I don't care about any of that. None of that matters. Everything's done already.
I see. Dad, you're saying that the Rabbanan were taking this very conservative stance, that they had already said, this is the way the halacha is, we know it. And Rabbi Eliezer is the revolutionary who's trying to change it by bringing all kinds of proofs. And Rabbi Yeshua says, No, we don't change. That's why you read the story.
That's why I read this, not as a general story, but in these specifics, that's how I read it.
Okay, yes. I've never heard that interpretation before.
I would read it as that revelation happened once, and since then, that's it. Once, now that it's been given, the Torah's been given, then it's up to us to interpret it, no matter what. Isn't that
so why isn't Rabbi Eliezer able to interpret it?
Say it again.
So why is Rabbi Eliezer's interpretation invalid?
Because it's not, because it says it goes according to the majority.
Mm. Okay.
And he's not with the majority. You can't have some charismatic, you know, figure who's, you know, I don't know, seems to have a direct line to Shemayim and go by him, because that's a slippery slope to...
Interesting. So tell me, is Rabbi Eliezer correct in his interpretation or not? Or we don't even know and we don't care?
I don't think it really matters. That's not the point of the story, whether his interpretation is correct or not.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the story is that we don't go by one, we go by the majority. The Torah, maybe he's receiving his individual revelation, but that's not... We don't go by that. The revelation was once only, and after that, it's for all of us, you know, to agree. I don't know what you do with all the machlokets that are around. Not quite sure how that fits in.
Okay, so let's take a look at how
It seems to me Rabbi Eliezer had three signs that were divine signs, actually. These were all basically nisim, but they said, nevertheless, that's not how we decide halacha.
Yeah,
we don't rely on these. I don't care that the river flowed backwards or that the tree moved.
I think I'm less bothered by the natural signs than I am by the bat kol. I mean, what do we do about that bat kol? There's a voice from heaven coming out and saying, Rabbi Eliezer is always right. Why are you arguing with him? You know,
I have a problem with that.
It's pretty strong. I mean, why are we listening to the bat kol?
In those days, they had Nevi'im, and they had contact with... Hold on, were we after the Anshei Knesset Zagdala? What stage
are
we at?
This is way after that. They didn't have Nevi'im, but they apparently had a bat kol.
And they also had ghosts, because the Gemara talks about ghosts as well. So they had supernatural things going on. And they had walls moving in, and they clearly had some kind of signs. Did they have Tzaraas?
I don't know. But the point over here is definitely that there were signs. But I mean, even more than signs, there was literally a voice from Shamayim. It's pretty stark. So let's take a look at how some of the Rishonim and Achronim understood this story. And I think they have very divergent viewpoints about how to understand it. And hopefully it will relate back to all the things that we've been learning already. We'll see. So Rav Nisim Gaon, okay, Rav Nisim Gaon is one of the Gaonim, but actually a little bit after the Gaonim that we know. So he says, why are you guys arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? So he says, I've seen two understandings of this. The first is the bat kol lo amra shalacha kamoto badavar hazeh ela bekol makom stam hu. So the first answer that Rav Nisim Gaon says is that the bat kol didn't say Rabbi Eliezer was right about this. It just says Rabbi Eliezer is always right. So that's the general thing. Rabbi Eliezer is always right. Why do you argue with him? He's so smart. You know, I had, it reminds me of an experience I had once when I was in high school. I went to high school with some very, very smart people. And I remember there was one who was extremely, extremely intelligent, the smartest kid in the school probably. And he, you know, he didn't show off often. You didn't usually hear him bragging about how smart he was. It wasn't a big deal. But there was one time that I think we were working on a project together in chemistry or something. And I wasn't the greatest student. I really wasn't. You can ask my parents. And we got to a certain point where it was requesting a piece of information. And I wanted to write down a piece of information. He said, no, that's wrong. And I said, no, I think it's right. And he said, no, it's wrong. And I said, well, I think you're wrong. And I think I'm right. And he said, that's not likely. I just couldn't say anything. He'd never said anything like that before, and I don't think I ever heard him say anything like that since after that. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where, like, it's not really the point about whether you're right about this or wrong about this particular point. The point is, I'm always right, and you're not. So Rabbi Elazar is always right. So it's something along those lines. So it's not saying in particular that the Bat Kol Kivyachol came out and said, in this specific instance, Rabbi Eliezer is right. It's just saying, guys, haven't you learned your lesson? Rabbi Eliezer is a smart guy. Why are you arguing with him? So that should make some difference. But then his second answer, he says, is the Avshar Lomar, Shebekol Makom Zulati Zeh HaMakom Hayta Kavanata. Oh, Mashadoma Lo V'tamo She'en Alach Rabbi Eliezer V'davar Zeh. And here's the second interpretation, is an even stronger interpretation, which says, by saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in all places, it's kivyachol in some way, maybe implying that it's like him in all places except for this one. Now, what's nice about this interpretation is it removes completely, the teeth of the story. I don't know if that's nice or not nice, but basically, according to this interpretation of Rav Nissim Gaon, the end of the story basically says that the Bat Kol came out and said that Rabbi Eliezer was wrong. In which case, Rabbi Yeshua can get up and say, you know, Lo b'shamayim, we don't have to listen to Rabbi Eliezer. Now, it doesn't really make sense for Rabbi Yeshua to say that anymore, because if the Bat Kol is agreeing with them, it doesn't make any sense. But it could be that was how he interpreted it. But it certainly removes the philosophical difficulty over here of Rabbi Eliezer having a Bat Kol backing him up and them disagreeing with him, because ultimately, according to this interpretation, he doesn't have a Bat Kol. Now, I don't think most agree with this interpretation because, like I said, Rabbi Yeshua doesn't make much sense. According to this. But it is interesting. Now, here are some more well-known mainstream positions that are accepted in other sources. You have a Joshua Taran. The Ran, of course, wrote many, many Svarim, and he wrote commentaries on the Rif and on Gemaras. Like in Nedarim, we only have the Ran. We don't really have anything besides for the Ran. He's really the strongest Perush. But he also wrote a set of Drashot. You could buy them. Instead of Drashot, Mosada of Kook came out with a very thick version of it with footnotes. So in his Drush HaShvi'i, it's a long Drashot based on philosophical topics. He says, V'zayin yin tzarech iyun. We have to figure this out. Eich nomar sheshtei kitot machloket ne'emru l'moshe mipi agbura. Hari shamei v'hilal nechliku. Shamei omar mikav chala v'halal omar mikabayim. V'emach she'echad mishnei adeot amiti v'asheni hafcho. V'eich nomar sheyatza mipi Hashem davar bilti amiti. He says, to begin with, how are we supposed to understand machloket in general? How could it be that Shammai could take one position and Hillel should take one position and they could both be recorded for posterity? How can we accept that? It says, everything was given to Moshe. What did he just say? He just said, like the Or HaChaim HaKadosh before him, and like the Chavod Da'at before him, that what? That everything was given to Moshe at Sinai, like the Gemara in Yerushalmi and the Gemara in Brachos that we saw, everything, including all of Nevi'im, and including every machloket and every halachic discussion that's ever going to come about, and including our discussion right now. However, how were they given to Moshe? They were given to Moshe below hachra'a. Moshe was given brisker shiurim. He was given all sides of every single halachic argument without the psak. Okay, one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Asaf Bednarsh, so he once told us that when he was in America, so he used to give shiur in MTA, only to the boys. To the high school of boys, he gave the top shiur. He gave like the advanced Talmud shiur. And so he was used to it. And then he came to Eretz Israel, and he was giving shiur in the Gros Kollel to smicha students. And you know, he was giving a similar type of shiurim. And then he was asked to give halacha shiurim to the women, to the wives of the Kollel students in Yerushalayim. And he said he gave the first shiur. It was a halacha shiur. And I think he was talking about Hilchos Brachos. And he was talking about potato chips. And he was talking about what bracha do you make on potato chips, and he was going into all the ins and outs and the svaras and the chilukim and the rishonim and the achronim, and he gave a bang up shir. And then at the end, a girl got up and said, okay, so what bracha do we make on potato chips? And he said, you know, nobody ever asked me that before. He said, the boys never asked that question. He said he never had to decide that before. So he completely changed his style of giving the shiur, and he started looking into more of the English svarim that come to only conclusions, that give you like the bottom line halakha. Because his style was to give, you know, a conceptual shiurim. Of course he knew what bracha he made, but the point was that he had to change his style because different people want different. So Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Ran, was given, you know, Gemara shiurim with all the different opinions, with no clear hachra'ah at the end. Why does that matter? He was given all these shiurim, and then he was given a rule. And the rule was, when it comes to what the halacha is, you just have to go after the majority. You should follow the majority of the rabbis. There are all kinds of rules about how to decide the final halacha. The rabbis are given the latitude and the right to decide the end halacha. And even, it can even change over time. Now here he says something interesting. He says, so we were told to follow the majority of the rabbis, whether it is correct or whether it is not. And now he gets to our story. And this is the story of Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Umachlo Kokta. How does he understand it? He says, Hine, Ra'u Kulam Shabbi Eliezer Maskim El Amet Yom Adem. They said, you know what? Rabbi Eliezer is more correct in terms of Svarot. He's more correct. V'chiototav Kulam Amitiyim Tzodkim. These are correct and accurate and trustworthy signs. Nevertheless, they follow their own ruling. Why? Now the Ran is putting forth a really, really interesting idea, which is going to be elaborated on later. And that is that there may be a difference between the objective truth and the truth as it appears to us humans. Okay? And I know that that's at the same time, a deep idea and also an uncomfortable idea. But it's to say that, you know what? For example, I think there was a famous line, which I never really got to the bottom of, that's attributed to Buckminster Fuller. Dad, do you know who that is? Buckminster Fuller? I think he's some kind of physicist or something like that. Where supposedly he asked his students who were looking at a beautiful sunset. And he asked them, you know, what are you seeing? And the students said, we're seeing a beautiful sunset. The sun is, you know, going down below the horizon and there are beautiful colors everywhere and they could describe the colors. And he said, see, that's what's wrong with your generation. You know very well you're not seeing a sunset. You're seeing the earth revolve around the sun and the earth spinning in its orbit. And it only looks like the sun is setting, but that's not at all what's happening. He said, both of those are true. One is from our perspective, and one is from the perspective of the galaxy, of the entire universe. So what the Ran is suggesting is that Rabbi Yoshua said to Rabbi Eliezer, you know, the Batko may agree with you because on some plane of existence, you're absolutely correct. However, from our perspective, this is the way that we see things. And the majority of people see it that way. And that's the important thing. How do the majority of chachamim, of human, tamidi chachamim, how do they see this issue? And since the majority of human chachamim see this issue that way, that's the halacha.
You can also bring an example from Yehoshua when he was fighting a battle, I forget against whom, and he commanded the sun to stop moving.
Right.
In fact, this is, the sun doesn't move, we're the ones that move, but the people, perspective of the people is that the sun is moving, and that's how it's described.
That's right. Rabbi Carmi also used to teach us, I forget where it is, I think it was in Sefer Yechezkel, where there's some description of the planets, which was factually inaccurate. And he said, yeah, it's factually inaccurate, but that's how it looks to humans. So that's why it's described that way. Even though it was in Nevuah, right? You would expect that in the Nevuah of Yechezkel, he would write the way things that really are. But he said, no, that's not how it works. It works that you see things the way that human beings see things, which is an interesting idea. But I also want to highlight the fact that the Ran went back to our original discussion about what Moshe learned at Har Sinai. And he suggested that Moshe actually learned everything. He just didn't learn any conclusions, which is also, a striking idea, because we're supposed to come to the conclusion. It actually jives well with a different Gemara that says that Moshe Rabbeinu was taught 49 ways to make anything tame and 49 ways to make anything tahor, which implies that there's some subjectivity to it, which the Maharal goes into in another place, not here. We're about to see the Maharal over here. So let's take a look at what the Maharal says. The Maharal is going to actually go a little bit back to Rav Nisim Gaon's idea, but say it a little bit differently. It says, Shekvar zachu b'Torah shenitna b'Sinai, v'Torah u'sechel elyon pashut yoter min bat kol. The Torah is the purest form of wisdom, even more than a bat kol. What we got at Har Sinai was the purest form of wisdom. That's how he starts. Ve'ein haTorah shehi sechel elyon pashut holechet acharei pirtei chachamim. The Torah, given that it is the purest form of wisdom, it cannot be decided and adjudicated by singular individual chachamim. We would never say that because somebody is so wise that the halakha is like him. Why? Why would we never say that? You guys say, why would we never say that because somebody is so wise, the halakha is like him? What's the answer? The Maharal will say, because nobody...
That would stop the fight.
Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, that would stultify the entire development of halakha.
Okay.
We would have to go back to that. That person would be equal, the equivalent of Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's an interesting idea. That's very interesting.
Things change.
That's a very interesting idea. I think the Maharal, though, is saying something a little bit different. The Maharal is saying the reason why we can't say that, a person is so brilliant that the halakha is always like him is because the assumption behind that point is that he's so brilliant that his wisdom is perfect, and therefore he must be right because he was mechaven to the Torah, kivyachol. But the Maharal says nobody is that brilliant. So because nobody is that brilliant, he's always going to be, there's always a possibility that he made a mistake. So we can't attach to him the wisdom of the Torah. We can't say that, he was definitely mechaven to the Torah. Because nobody's perfect. Nobody's mind is so perfect. So what do we do? So this is a quasi-Renaissance philosophical idea that the klal is more accurate. The truth is actually that this is a very modern idea. You guys have heard of the wisdom of crowds? I actually saw this in action when I used to work at HP. So we had like an info session. The guy was teaching us about the wisdom of crowds, and he brought in, I'm sure you've seen this before. He brought in like a bottle filled with, I think it was jelly beans. Let's just say it was jelly beans. Okay. Filled with jelly beans. You don't know how many. And he said, I know how many jelly beans are in here. I want everybody to write down on a piece of paper how many jelly beans they think is in here. And then hand it in. And everybody did. And the numbers ranged wildly. There was 300 to 1,500 to 1,500. They just ranged wildly. And he predicted beforehand, and he was correct, that the average between everything, or I think it was the median, I don't remember exactly what it was, but the average of everybody's prediction was more accurate than anyone's prediction. Nobody came closer to the actual number than the average of everybody. So that's kind of an example of the wisdom of crowds. I don't want to attach that idea to the Maharal, but it's definitely a nice analogy. So he says, "Ein mashkichin bevat."
You know, when you talk about one person being the supreme and the only expert on halacha, in some ways, I think perhaps we might wish we had somebody like that today. Rather than having so many different opinions on halacha, you say, "Hey, this is the halacha. How do I know? Because Rabbi Eliezer told me so." Yeah. And that's how I know. Yeah, and by the way, while we're at it, I might also point out that I noticed you quoted the Ber HaGola, which we learned last week, is your ancestor.
So this is a different Ber HaGola.
Oh. All right.
So there's two Ber HaGolas. It's usually not so confusing.
Rabbi Schreiber Senior, I think you wouldn't enjoy it if there was just one halachic person. You get so much enjoyment out of listening to the way that halacha is reached and how we actually get to it. It's, I mean,
so the truth
well,
is,
Rabbi Eliezer could teach me how he reaches the halacha.
Sfardim and Ashkenazim in modern day.
There's so much learned from the Dera.
One of the major differences between the Sfardim and Ashkenazim is that at least modern day Sfaradim, so they have Rav Avadia Yosef. Many have Rav Avadia Yosef. They just say, whatever Rav Avadia said, that's what we're going to do. We don't have anyone like that. No one.
Yeah, but Rav Avadia Yosef didn't have Rav Avadia Yosef. He enjoyed learning all the Shakal and Tara of all the different Rishonim, Achronim, to be able to reach the halacha which he gave his opinion with.
You're right. He did. But your average Sfaradi doesn't anymore. He doesn't need it. He just opens up a Yalkut Yosef. Whatever it says to do, that's what he does. And there's something to that. There's something comforting about that. We don't have anyone like that. No one.
They're losing out.
They're not losing. Of course they're learning. Of course they learn all this stuff.
No, I'm sure. I'm not saying they're not learning. I'm just saying if you don't have to think about it and try to reach the halacha by yourself, taking everybody else's logic into account, you're missing the plot.
Right. But I just want to get back to the point that
I don't think the goal is just to do halacha lamaisa. I think the goal is to learn what Hashem wanted and see the logic within, with all the different opinions. That's what I think.
Right. But keep in mind, the Maharal's point is that no single person can do it because no single person really encompasses the Torah. But that, getting back to the Ber HaGola that's quoted on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, that gives the footnotes for where Rav Yosef Karo gets everything from, that's our Be'er HaGola. That's apparently in our lineage. Whereas the Be'er HaGola over here is the Maharal. It's just one of his books. This is one of the books of the Maharal. It's called the Be'er HaGola.
Okay.
So what the Maharal ends up saying, how does he explain our Gemara? So he says, "Eina perusha halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer m'mnei hadin atzmo." Really, what it is, Amar bat kol sheyesh lechet acharei dever Eliezer b'kol makom shekol kachu gadol b'torah v'natan Rabbi Eliezer chashivat ma'alazot. What the Maharal says, this Gemara is telling us this exact point. Rabbi Eliezer was so smart that the halacha is always like him because he's so smart. So he's like the person that's the uber Torah person. We should always listen to him. But Rabbi Yeshua gets up and he says, no, there's no one like that. There's no one who's always right. We follow the majority because the majority is always going to be closer to the what Hashem wants from us than any single person. And Hashem was happy to see that. Hashem was happy that we don't follow any single person, no matter how smart or, as Barbara said, charismatic or whatever it is. We don't follow any single person. We follow the majority. We try to follow what the wisdom of the majority of the Chachamim says.
Are you equating the average to the majority? Is that your story before about the average?
It's just an analogy. It's the average point just makes a point about the wisdom of crowds, that you're more likely to get to the truth by following the majority, by following the crowd, which is another way of talking about the average.
I know we probably don't like to discuss it, but how much politics were there involved in the decision-making process? There seemed to be quite a lot of, choose my words carefully.
Come on, let it out. Come on.
They banished Rabbi Huda Anasi a few times and they seem to have a lot of political wars there between the Rabbonim. And I'm sure it was all Hashem Shemayim, but sometimes it doesn't seem that way.
Well, I think we have to differentiate between politics and agendas, right? I mean, when you talk about politics and like use it as a dirty word, so usually you mean like power plays or like, you know, somebody's after money or something like that. So I would be careful about ascribing those things to the Chachamim, the ones that we're talking about. But if you're talking about, you know, Shammai, Hillel, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, even if you're talking about, you know, the politics of the day in terms of whether or not we should, you know, rebel against the Romans or not, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that stuff factored in, but why shouldn't it?
I'm not going to either of those two extremes. Chas v'shalom, I wouldn't say it's politics, but they seem to kind of cuss each other out quite a lot.
Okay. Yeah, they do. I think that's a difference in temperament, but yeah, there are some funny Gemaras. The Rishonim did as well. It wasn't something they shied away from. You're right. They spoke to each other sometimes very harshly.
And the question then that one begs to ask at that stage is this a machlokes l'shem shamayim? They seem to take it very personally. It's like, oh, you can't talk about my rabbi.
Maybe they did. I don't know. But I tend to assume, yeah. I mean, Shammai Hillel is the quintessential machlokes l'shem shamayim. And we can assume that they used to... Look, I think the greatest raya that it was l'shem shamayim is that you find throughout Shas that all the time people say, it says, you know, hadar be rava, hadar be rav, which means he changed his mind. You know, people changed their mind. They were convinced by the other side. It happened. You have Rav Yochanan talking about how he misses Reish Lakish because Reish Lakish was somebody who disagreed with him instead of having people agreeing with him all the time. Right? This was something that they... You get the sense that the intellectual integrity and honesty was of paramount importance, which I think is a safeguard against corruption.
Okay.
Okay, let's continue. So here we have the Ksota Choshen. I think we're almost at the end of what I wanted to do. We have the Ksota Choshen. That's, I always forget his name, Rev Aryeh Heller. See?
Is that the famous Tzais?
Yeah, it is. Aryeh Leib Heller. There you go. Rav Aryeh Leib Heller. So in his introduction to the Ksos HaChoshen, which is one of the most learned works in any yeshiva, anytime you're learning anything in the Zikin, the Ksos HaChoshen comes up. So in his introduction, he has a beautiful introduction. And he addresses our Gemara. He says, U'bazeh yuvan hadayita bezohar b'chidushi araita, the borei eretz chadasha, So he says, when Hashem created the world, he created the world out of the Torah, and the world was, and there's no sheker in the world, and there's no sheker in Torah. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bachar banu v'natan lanu et haTorah. He says, however, Hashem gave over to us the right to be machria, to decide and adjudicate the Torah, and he gave it over to Seichel Enoshi. That's what Hashem showed to Moshe Rabbeinu, what people would decide. And he says, the Midrash tells us, Amar Siman, when God wanted to create the world, so the angels, you know, broke off into factions. Some of them said, you should not create man. And some of them said that you should create man. And the Midrash describes them as almost these celestial values. He says, for example, Chesed ve'emet nifgashu. Chesed and truth encounter each other. Chesed omer yivra, shekulo malei chesedim. Man does chesed. His nature is to do chesed. Ve'emet omer lo yivro, shekulo malei shkarim. Yeah, but he lies. So chesed wants man to be created, and emet does not want man to be created because he lies. Ma'asa kadosh baruch hu natal emet v'yishlicha arza. Shnei barav tashlech emet arza. He threw the truth to the ground. Now, what does that mean? Amru lefanav Ribbono Shalom Atam Vazet Tachshit Shalcha. What? Hashem, Emet, that's your seal. Chotamo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Emet, that's how you sign your name with truth. Hashem said, I'd rather that the truth should come from the ground. Okay, what does that mean? So the Ktzot says, Hainu, Mishum the Adua de Seichel Ha'adam Yil El Hasik Ha'emet Bihot Be'eretz Shorsho. That the mind of man will try to come to truth from the ground, from what he knows. V'laze amru, atam azet tachshit shalcha. Oops. Man is never going to come to the ultimate truth. He can't. He can't come to absolute truth. Man doesn't have the ability. He's always befed by forces, by his emotions, by mistakes, by human frailties, by all kinds of things. God, you're creating a world that's going to be filled with lies, with untruth. That's exactly what I want. Man will decide what the truth is. Now he continues and he says, this is what our bracha is when we make a bracha to Torah. So the next time you say bracha to Torah, what do you say? Asher natalanu Torah temet. She hemet itanu. B'chayi olam natabatuchenu. He gave us Torah temet. He gave us the ability to be machriya, to decide what the emet is. And chayi olam natabatuchenu l'fi ma shehiksha beran. Now he's going to quote exactly the Ran that we learned before. The consequences of every mitzvah and every aveira is chaye olam, is olam haba. If you get something, if you say this piece is chaylev, or if you say that this piece is shuman, if it's kosher or not kosher, the ramifications of that are eternal. And you're handing that over to man to decide and to get right or wrong. So he says, he says that God gives over that power to the Chachamim, that even if they get something wrong, the person who follows the Chachamim will be protected by the authority given to the Chachamim. It's kivyachol to say that the Chachamim have the ability to be koveya, to establish what reality is in certain circumstances. You know, if this reminds you of the whole thing with the Tzara'at, right? Where we said the opposite of this, right? With the Tzara'at and Jake, and when Jake was corrected by Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So this is the opposite of that. And if we don't get it right, he says, in other words, these offset each other. We have a Torah, he gave us a Torah Temet, but if we get it wrong, then Chaye Olam Etab Tochenu, he still protects us because we were given the authority and the right to get things wrong. And he says, V'hainu, Dimaya, Haya Ako Bichtav, Miyara Shamalinu. If everything would have given Bichtav, there would be no Torah Shabbat Peh. He said, we would never be able to understand, I think is what he means, we would never be able to understand if everything was written. So some of it had to be unwritten, and we have to figure it out, and we have to come to our own conclusions. I think that's what he means. Now he concludes, and he says, that this is what David HaMelech means. Okay, so there's a nice board, he says, David HaMelech says, "Etalech lefanai Hashem ba'artzot achayim he'emanti ki adaber." Okay, the mila the itchadesh ba'araita itavid artzot achayim. That the words that we are mechadesh of Torah creates the artzot achayim. It creates the olam haba, and that's what it says in the Zohar. "Vahinu damer etalech lefanai Hashem ba'artzot achayim that patcha chokma b'torat chesed pitcha." There's a big, big, big chiddush of the Ksot HaChoshen. What does the phrase Torah Chesed mean that we say in Eshet Chayil? Torah Chesed Al Shona. What does it mean? So I've seen many different interpretations. The Gra says in one place that it means that the Torah of Chesed is the Torah that you teach. When you learn Torah in order to teach it, that's a Torah of Chesed. I've seen that Torah of Chesed is that the Torah is filled with Chesed, that the Torah teaches us how to be Gomli Chesed. But the Ktzot says that's not what Torah of Chesed means. He says Torah of Chesed means we were given Torah Shebaal Peh and the ability to be Machria and thereby saved from all of the mistakes. Hashem says you have the ability and the right to decide what the halakha is, and that's my chesed to you. It's Hashem's chesed to us.
Rav Dani, I didn't hear that. You broke up.
Oh, I'm
Can
sorry.
Can you just say that last bit again?
Yes, I thought it was only my computer that broke up, but apparently it wasn't.
I think it's my it's the fire that I'm emitting is messing with the connection. So the Ktzot says, what does Torah Chesed mean? He says, Torah Chesed means that Hashem did us a Chesed. He said, this Torah that I'm giving you, you're going to figure out what it means, and I'm not going to hold you to the ultimate truth, to the Emet. It's not a Torah Emet; it's a Torah Chesed. Even if you get it wrong, you're still right. The Torah Shebaal Peh was given to the Hachra'at Chachamim. Alpha Bishenu Emet. Benikra Torah Chesed. Because Chesed is not the same as Emet. It's true that sometimes we call it Torah Emet. Moshe Emet v'Torah Emet. So maybe it means that only Moshe had Torah Emet. Only Moshe had 100% accuracy. But we only have Torah Chesed. We do our best, and Hashem says, even if you get it wrong, Chaye Olam Ata B'Tocheinu. I give you the right to get it wrong.
Which means if I get a wrong psak from the associate Rav of the Shul, am I potter or what?
Well, you should probably be asking your questions towards the Rabbi of the Shul, not the associate Rabbi. That's your best.
And if I get a wrong psak from any Rav, I don't want to get personalized.
So,
here's
where things take a halachic turn. There's a whole Masechet Horiot about this. The beginning of Masechet Horiot is all about what happens when the rabbis get it wrong. Okay? But this is a whole different subject that I wasn't planning on covering tonight. I'll try to cover it maybe in a nutshell over here. The Gemara has, a whole discussion what happens when the rabbi gets it wrong. I think I have a shiur on Wayu Torah about this. So you can go look it up on Wayu Torah. Masechet Horiot, I talked about this. And there's a problematic Ramban as well about this, where the Ramban implies that it can't ever be wrong. In fact, I think I have this on the sheet. Here. Dad, you know what? We'll end with this. I'll go till the end. The Rambam quotes a halacha over here about a certain hadas, which is either supposed to be kosher or not kosher. And the Rambam comes to a conclusion, let's see, that it's kosher, okay? But look what the Ravid says. The Ravid argues and he says, Kfar horia hofia ruach ha-kodesh bebeit midrashenu mikama shanim ve'aleinu shehu pasul kestam mishnatenu. The Ravid claims that he knows for a fact that it's pasul because he had ruach ha-kodesh in his beit midrash. Now this could be a poetic flourish. It could be that he's just being, poetic and saying that he had Ruach HaKodesh, but what he really means is that I'm right. Could be that that's what he means. But the thing is that the Ravid says this in a bunch of different places in similar language. He says, Sod Hashem Lirayav, the secret of God goes to those who fear him. And so it seems like the Ravid took this very seriously. Like this Gemara over here, where Ben Azai never gets married. And the Gemara wonders why Ben Azai is allowed to not get married. You're supposed to get married. And one of the answers is, Sod Hashem Lirayav. Because he knows something that we don't know. That Hashem transmitted to him something that we don't know about. Okay, so that seems to imply that there's some kind of higher knowledge. Now, what does this come down to? So, I'm really not doing this justice, but like I said, there's another shiur online that you can look up if you want to see more about this. There's a Ramban that talks about V'lo tasor mikol asher yagidu lecha, Yamin or small, right? If they tell you that your right is your left or your left is your right, you always have to follow them. So why is that? Why do you always have to follow what the rabbis say? So there's two options. The Ramban says, Ramban really also gives his own two options, but they're pretty much the same. He says, Ki adat shelehem unotein, Hashem gives us the Torah with the proviso that we listen to the rabbis. Afilu yeh beinecha kemachlif yamin u'smol. And even if it seems like you're switching, they're switching right and left. V'kol shekein sheyesh lecha lachshov shehem omrim mal yamin shu yamin. Obviously, if they're right, they're right. Now, why do you have to listen to the rabbis? Ki ruach Hashem al mishartei mekadsho. V'lo yazov et chasidav. L'olam nishmur min ha-ta'ut min ha-mikshol. The Ramban claims that Hashem protects the Beit Din from getting things wrong. They never get it wrong. Hashem protects them. That's his claim. But the problem is, I told you already, the Gemara in Hariot says that they do get things wrong sometimes. So how could the Ramban say this? And the thing is, the Ramban says this in more than one place. I'm not going to show you all the places he says it, but he says this in more than one place. Meanwhile, the Sefer HaChinuch appears to disagree. The Sefer HaChinuch says, no, it's much more mundane than that. It says, even if they tell you right is left or left is right, you have to listen to them. Na'aseh kita'utam. We have to follow them even in their mistakes. V'tov lizbol ta'ut echad, v'yihiyu hakol mesurim tachat da'atam atov tamid, v'lo shi'aseh kol echad v'echad k'fidato, shebazeh yeh churban adat v'chiluk leiv ha'am v'hefsed ha'uma legamrei. It's better to listen to the Chachamim and to follow their position, even when you know for a fact that they're wrong, which, again, this is complicated by the Gemara Mariot. But the reason is because as a policy, it's better that we should get one thing wrong, but at least remain unified and have a derech, than it is to everybody just go off in their own different direction. That's much more dangerous and much more damaging. So that's how the Sefer HaChinuch answers that. So this, you know, seems to boil down to a dispute about whether or not the rabbis can be ultimately wrong or not. The Ramban seems to take a very hardline position that the rabbis are always right. And even if it looks like they're wrong, they're right. And the Sefer HaChinuch takes a different position and says, no, the rabbis can be wrong, but we still follow them because that is the way the system works.
It's hard to understand because you say the rabbis are always right even when they disagree.
Well, we follow the majority. We follow the majority. Even when the majority is wrong. You know, the Gemara
like
gives
the Supreme,
examples.
The Gemara like
says,
the Supreme Court.
You have a piece of chelev and a piece of shuman, and the rabbis say, this piece of shuman is really chelev. This piece of kosher, of non-kosher meat is really kosher. That's the case in the Gemara. They say a non-kosher piece of meat is kosher. And you know for a fact that they're wrong. So anybody who follows the ruling of the rabbis and eats the piece of meat because they know, because they just say, whatever the rabbis say is kosher, is kosher. So those people, when they find out that the rabbis got it wrong, so the rabbis have to bring a korban, but they don't. In other words, the populace is exempt from bringing a korban because they didn't make a mistake. They just followed the rabbis. It's the Sanhedrin that has to bring a special korban. But, if you knew that the rabbis were wrong, and you did it anyways, and you ate it anyways, the Gemara says you have to bring a korban. In other words, if you're not shogeg, if you didn't, you know, eat the meat because you thought the rabbis were right, but you knew the rabbis were wrong and you ate it anyways, then when the rabbis correct themselves, you have to bring your own personal korban. Because you should have, you know, gone with your gut.
And if the rabbis don't correct themselves?
Good. So that's the question. How exactly does this work? So I know the Ramban gives the answer and he says, no, really, all you have to do is you have to go to the rabbis and you have to bring all the proofs that you have. You have to write a PhD thesis on why they're wrong and you're right. And if after all of that, they still disagree with you, then you're allowed to eat the chelev with a full heart. You're allowed to eat it. Even if you still think that you're right, you're allowed to eat it and then you'll be exempt later on. The case where you're going to be chayav is when you didn't do your absolute best to convince them. That's what the Ramban says. But already I've given you too much, and it goes into an extended discussion in the Gemara over there. Ayin Sham, and we're going to bring this to an end over here. I want to thank everybody for coming tonight and also to the other Shiurim. I think we covered a lot of ground, and I'm really happy that we were able to get this online.
Can I tell you a quick story you reminded me of when you talked about the incident at work where the average answer about the jelly beans was correct? Not no individual, but the average answer. I was at a workshop at teachers once that was conducted by a math professor from Hunter College. And he said, I want you all to number your papers 1 to 10. We're going to take a true or false question test. True or false test. And he looks around his briefcase and he says, you know what? I forgot the questions. So just write true or false for all 10 of them, whatever you want. And we all wrote true or false for all 10, whatever we chose. We took guesses, obviously. And then he says, you know what else I forgot? I forgot my answer sheet. So we're going to flip a coin. Heads is true, tails is false. So number one, flips a coin, false. Number two, flips a coin, true, whatever it was. Then he charts a graph and he says, how many of you got only one right? And he plots it on the graph. How many got all 10 right? Plots that on the graph. And so on until he gets all the numbers. And the answer of the answers of the crowd formed a perfect bell curve. Perfect bell curve. Right in the middle, the majority of the group, maybe 40, not the majority, the plurality, say, 40, between 40 and 50% of the crowd had like 5 or 6 out of the 10 correct. Just by pure guessing.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
Try all right, doing that in the stock market.
Just so you guys know, tomorrow night I'll be giving a Gemara shiur on a topic that's somewhat related, because the Daf Yomi got up to the issue of lice and killing lice on Shabbat.
Yeah.
where there's some dispute about whether or not modern science should affect halakha and whether we allow it to change the halakha as it was given to us many years ago if we discover something new. So certainly related to our topic. If anybody wants to join, it'll be on Zoom tomorrow night at 8:30.
Shkoyach.
Good night.
Thank you.
Love, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.